Up, everyone. It is past the mic. We are back. September 13th. Big post Eagles week one and bit of Phillies talk this week following a big Eagles win and Rhys Hoskins taking the city by storm. So I'm here joined with Briggs as always. Briggs, what's up, my man?
I am doing great. As you said, coming off a big Eagles win. Always feels good to Eagles. When the Eagles win, didn't look great, but hey, a win's a win's a win. And as you stated, Rhys Hoskins is just fun to watch. It's fun to watch Phillies baseball again, which is very nice to say.
Yeah, so I know last week we said, you know, we're really just going to dive into the Eagles. There's some exciting stuff going on with the Phillies, but we're not really going to get to it. I think we've got to get to it this week for a little while. We'll talk about the Eagles in a little bit, but I think we'll start with the Phillies. They're still like 25-30 games under 500, but things are looking up. I mean, this is a really exciting time, I would say, and I think you would agree.
No, absolutely. We've talked about it before where earlier in the season we talked about getting these young guys up from AA and AAA just to see what they could do in the majors. And over the past month, it's been very impressive what these players have done between Nick Williams and Alfaro and Rhys Hoskins, obviously. Nola, who's been with the team but who's pitched well. Cesar Hernandez is still playing well. Galvis, J.P. Crawford has come up and showed flashes of, you know, actual potential skill. He's better than Michael Franco, it looks like, at the plate in regards to discipline. It's just been fun to watch, and it makes you think that next year – this is a team that, with a little bit of pitching, could maybe go 500.
Yeah, and maybe 500 is marked improvement. And something that I think, you know, as we looked at the team at the beginning of this year, we wouldn't have really expected. So I'm quite pleased. I think, you know, you hit on a lot of the guys. And they're all great. But the big story is Rhys Hoskins. And I think, you know, it's been played a lot in the media. But it is literally historic, the numbers he's putting up. So it's about 9 o'clock on Wednesday night, and about 25 minutes ago, Rhys Hoskins just hit his 17th home run of the season. He has 17 home runs in 32 games. Just to put that into perspective, it took Hank Aaron 137 games and Mike Schmidt 115 games to hit their 17th home run. So if we trended it out over the season, he's on pace to hit 85. Now, obviously, he's probably not going to do that, and this isn't a full season, but it just shows like what kind of torrid pace he's on. It's not like this was a flash in the pan. He's also got over 20 walks. He has, like, I think he has 22 walks and 26 strikeouts, which for a power hitter is an awesome ratio. So just, you know, really impressive, and he's the kind of guy who it's like, okay, you have a bat in the middle of the order, and when you start putting pieces around him, like a Nick Williams and Alfaro, obviously Alfaro's defense needs to be worked on, but he's the kind of guy who's going to make all of those hitters better, because if pitchers are going to pitch around him, they're not going to be able to pitch around them. So pieces start to fall into place on your team when you have that stud, and it really obviously looks like Hoskins is that guy.
No, absolutely. Hoskins, defensively, he's also pretty strong. Can play multiple positions.
You'd like to see him at first base, right? That's his natural position. And I don't want, you know, move someone else to another position, in my opinion. If he's that good, just put him at his natural position. Let him play where he's comfortable and let him focus on swinging the bat.
No, I don't disagree with you, but it is nice that he has flexibility. I mean, obviously, he's the long-term solution at first base. Tommy Joseph is not. And at least we had that answer at this point. There's no doubt about it that Tommy Joseph, if he's going to remain with this team, he'll have to be a bench player.
Tommy Joseph has 21 home runs this season.
Yeah.
Hoskins has 17. He's played in maybe a quarter of the games.
Exactly. But like you said, having Hoskins and going into next year, you have a lineup with promise, and coming into the years of these big potential free agents, and a lot of people have talked about the Bryce Harpers, the Manny Machados, eventually the Mike Trouts. going to be players that look like other great players are going to want to play with. And that's a really big deal because the Phillies are going to, they're not going to be able to do it themselves. You know, they don't have enough firepower in regards to, there's only three or four guys. If they can bring in, you know, one true all-star caliber player from the start to help build around these guys and then bring in a couple pitchers, you know, in 2019, this is a team that should be looking to make the playoffs again.
Yeah, and the interest, I mean, the biggest thing obviously is around the pitching, right? We haven't been even drafting for pitching in terms of our first round pick, second round pick. So you're going to eventually need to bring in some arms, but I think we're kind of going the Cubs model where you're worried about right now building through young position players with the knowledge that you can go and pick up a pitcher to on the trade market or in free agency to supplement those position players who are playing on the field every day. So I don't disagree with what's going on. You know, I think people, it's easy to be critical of Klentak for not bringing some of these guys up earlier, but who knows, maybe Hoskins comes up at the beginning of the year and he doesn't play this well. I don't know. I mean, it seems like he's just a natural and he has 45 combined home runs or 46 between the minors and the majors this year. But, yeah, you can't really knock the guy because Klentak, because it seems like we've got a promising core now, and I'm all in. I mean, I'm good with where we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that these guys could have been brought up earlier.
I don't think you're much better as a team, though, right? Like, I don't think that's now pushing you into the playoffs. Maybe it gives you 10 more wins, so you're 15 games under 500.
No, and to me, it wasn't about wins. It's about getting these guys major league at bats versus minor league at bats, which they had proven that they could play in the minor leagues. That was my whole thing. I understand that there's theory that you want to make sure that they have enough experience in the minors, but to a point, over 2.5 years now, we've seen a lot of these guys doing this. So what was an additional 50, 60 at bats in the minors that they couldn't have gotten at the majors? So that's one of my, you know, drawbacks is there's also guys down there like Kingery that's still not up that really doesn't belong in the minors. So I understand that he doesn't have a position currently on the major league roster, but at a certain point you have to just choose who's going to be your player moving forward. Is it Cesar or is it Kingery? Like, just it's a tough decision, but it needs to be made. So I'd rather have it come sooner rather than later. Then additionally, in regards to Klentak, I think there's two things going into the offseason that really have to be acknowledged. What do you do with Odubel Herrera, who has once again proven that he is just he has the best moments and then the absolute worst moments.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's meant for this team long term. And then what do you do with Pete Maccannon? Because Maccannon did not look like he was coming back next year. But over the last month and a half, he has had this team playing well with these new young guys. So
it's just tough, right? It's like he wasn't the one developing these young guys. Is it Maccannon or is it just that there's more talent on the team? Because you saw what he did with the team as they had it at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and at the same time, is it that Maccannon really was working with nothing? So he could have it, or does he work better with some of these younger guys who, you know, are willing to listen versus the veteran type players that he was dealing with most of the season? So it'll be interesting what they do with Klentak, as well as, I believe, Matt Stairs is the hitting coach. They seem to go through hitting coaches each and every year. So who knows? One of the things I would love for them to do is bring Carlos Ruiz in as a bench coach of sorts and have him really tutor and coach up Alfaro, because Ruiz was probably one of the best catchers defensively in baseball over his tenure, just never got the respect, unfortunately, since his bat was never never great. But defensively and calling an actual game, he was top five in majors.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think that addressing Alfaro's defense will be a huge priority from a teaching standpoint in the offseason. And then, yeah, we'll see what happens with Maccannon. So we'll see. I mean, being able to talk about the Phillies in September is something that I did not think was going to happen 2-3 months ago. So it's encouraging. But with that said, it is September. We just finished week one of the NFL season. Our Eagles came up with a big divisional win. Let's talk about the Birds. 30-17. Both of our predictions were a little off, but yeah, I mean, the game was pretty ugly, but we won, so I don't really care. I kind of feel like that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I don't think we played very well. Offensively, I thought we played very poor. Our offensive line is scary bad at times. And it's very concerning moving forward because Jason Kelce is just not big enough. We've said it over and over and over again, and it continues to prove to be correct. He's just not big enough to be the center in this type of offense. He was okay in a Chip Kelly type offense, not in these standard professional offenses where he has to move these large defensive tackles.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, Kelsey's like 300 pounds now. I don't think it's a – I think it's just his style of play. Like, I guess he's always been just that quick, agile guy. And like you said, that doesn't work. With regards to with pass protection, though, it's the line, but it's the running backs, too. Like, Wendell Smallwood and LeGarrette, like, Smallwood's not going to see the field because he can't block for two shits. Sproles is your best blocker, and he's 5'8". Like, it's crazy.
No, and I said it in the last podcast that I was more concerned with the running back position than I was the cornerback position because I don't think LeGarrette Blount is an NFL player. His best years were always with the Patriots in that offense. If you saw Thursday Night Football last week, Mike Gillisley had two rushing touchdowns immediately. So, I mean, it's a system of that offense. LeGarrette Blount is not a great running back. If he's going to have any type of success, he would need 25 to 30 carries. There were holes. There were times where there were holes, and he was only to get 3 or 4 yards, where most NFL running backs should be able to get 8 to 12.
Yeah,
but
I think you're right. You sign him, you know what you're going to get from him, and he gave you what I think. Like, he didn't do anything that I thought. Like, I wasn't surprised by his performance. I don't think it's as much a fault of him. It's just that's who he is. Like, when he played on the Patriots, if he got 25 carries, he'd get like 90 yards. He's not the guy who's going to average like 5 yards a carry. He's just going to grind it out. You know, 2 or 3 yards to carry, and then he's going to break one for 8.
Yeah, but again, that's why I don't really think he's necessary on this team because, again, we also didn't use him in short yardage properly. Like, we had a 3rd-and-2, and we ran him on an outside run. Like, if you're not going to use him properly, then get him off the team. It's just a waste of a roster spot then because he's only valuable in really one aspect, is in short yardage and goal line situations. And really, I don't know how successful he's going to be this year. I'm not a LeGarrette Blount fan. I never was with the signing. And then, like you said, Wendell Smallwood can't block. I would like to see Sproles in there 3 downs. Why not? This is his last year on the Eagles no matter what. Just run him into the ground. I honestly don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because you watch the preseason – you just forget. I mean, you don't forget how good Sproles is, but it's just like something that you haven't seen. And then you see him catch a screen pass or, you know, do a run, like have a run that gives you 5 yards and just quick. Everything's quick with him. So
pick up a run blitz or a pass blitz.
Yeah. And I think it's something that was sorely missed. I don't know what they're going to do. They might need to pick up another run.
It's bad. And additionally, on offense, the quarterback, who everybody loves, and he made, you know, some really great plays with his legs, continues to struggle in the pocket.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he had one completion on a deep pass, and I think if you consider a deep pass, it's a pass of over 20 yards in the air or something, right? And it was that broken Aguilar touchdown, which Great play.
Hell of a play.
But it's just, you know, what's going to separate a good quarterback from a great quarterback is when Torrey Smith gets three steps on a guy, you've got to hit him. And he's only going to do that three times a game. But two of those three times, I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but the very first play of the game, he missed that pass, almost got it intercepted. He missed another pass later in the game to Smith, and he underthrew one to Jeffrey. Like, it's something that he definitely needs to improve on. And yes, he's making the unbelievable play, but he's not making the routine play. And I think that's what's concerning to me.
Yeah. And I think, like, what's the point of having someone get open deep if you can't hit them?
Right.
Like, Torrey Smith was literally running, and he did a good job getting open. He was able to get by the corner.
He was Josh Norman.
Yeah. And Carson Wentz wasn't even close on the passes. He was either woefully overthrown or it was woefully underthrown and nearly intercepted. It just it baffles me because everyone talks about how strong his arm is. But his lack of ability to anticipate a deep throw is – like, why are they not working on that more? That's – like, you've had an entire offseason to work on that. And it wasn't like he was getting rushed in some of these throws. It was clean pockets.
Right. I mean, when he's at his best is when he's getting rushed, when he's flushed out of the pocket. Mechanics go to the wayside, and he's moving and has to make a play. Like, he made an amazing play getting away from that blitz and throwing one right in stride to Ertz down the sideline. That was a fantastic play. The Aguilar touchdown was great. But yeah, he missed some deep passes, and that's, you know, that's what you look at as something that's sustainable over a season. Like, when you project this game out, it's how's he doing on the throws on normal plays, not, you know, oh, he broke two tackles. The defense thought that they had them, so they relaxed a little bit on defense and Aguilar was wide open downfield or whatever. Those aren't really the plays that are sustainable. I mean, it's hard to be super critical of him on, you know, an absolute game basis just because they won. But
no.
Yeah, there were definitely moments where when you start to, you know, take his performance and look past this game, it's concerning.
No, the other thing is he's continued to stare down receivers. Like on that interception, which granted, I know it was deflected, but the reason it gets deflected is because the defensive line is able to just read your eyes.
Yeah.
So if you're staring down a receiver and that defensive lineman isn't getting the pressure that they want, as a defensive lineman, you're trained to get your hands up. Watch the quarterback's eyes, get your hands up. Well, that caused a pick six.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz, it was really 30-10. Carson Wentz gave up those, actually, the defense scored. So really, it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's big, and he needs to work on that. Now, do I think that Carson Wentz is not – that sucks after that game? No, I still – but I don't think that we're being constructive enough in our criticism with him because so many people just blindly look, we got to win. Carson, quote-unquote, looked great. He didn't look great. Just because he's Carson Wentz – and we'll get to this in a second. We got to stop with the Carson love until he actually shows us that he deserves it.
Yeah. I mean, stat-wise, it's fine. But, like, you know, if you look at his numbers, 26 for 39, 67%, two touchdowns, one interception. I mean, you don't see the fumble that he basically caused. But, yeah, just, you know, I think on paper, it's a deceiving performance. And I think that's the big takeaway. They won the game. It was the first game of the season. Honestly, like, the Washington secondary isn't – like, I mean, you have to go against Josh Norman. He's one of the best corners in the game. They really didn't look his direction very often. Who was the other corner? I mean, he's good. Yeah, for Rashad Breeland.
Yes.
He's not bad. So they actually have decent corners. Kerrigan's always a pain. It wasn't like it was a terrible performance, but again, I think it's a good to great. I think it's a good versus great. I think right now too many people are defaulting to great when he's good.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You know, and then in addition, like moving on to the receivers, who would have thought Aguilar would have the best game out of, and then granted, Torrey Smith got open and couldn't get a pass actually accurately thrown his way. But Aguilar looked better than anticipated. He caught the ball, which he hasn't done in the past two seasons.
He tried to drop the deep ball.
He did.
But then he made up for it. I mean, he made a great, like, one-handed catch on that one play from Wentz. That was an errant throw to a degree. But, yeah, I thought Aguilar looked very comfortable in the slot. I think it's a position that he's well-suited for because you're going to be going against the third corner on the opposing team. So I think for him, that's where he's going to be. I don't know if he'll ever be able to make the move back outside. But, I mean, what, he had 8 catches, 86 yards, and a touchdown?
Yeah, so he looked good. Torrey Smith, like we talked about, got open, but he was unable to get balls thrown to him. And then I actually may have cut Torrey Smith, though, following the game, on the fact that he showed zero effort in getting that fumble.
Well, and I think Doug Peterson's taken a lot of heat for some of the calls that he had around like wide receiver screens. I think what Doug's got to realize is, you know, that play works if you have wide receivers who can block. And Torrey Smith has no interest in blocking anyone.
None. He showed zero interest in blocking. He showed zero interest in recovering the fumble. And his quarterback is highly inaccurate, so there's no need to throw that.
He is pretty fast, though. I mean, he caught, I remember, like, you could see his speed on display even after the catch because he caught one ball that was, like, maybe a 10, 15-yard pass, and he took it another 20. And you could see him put on the afterburner. So, that's the thing. You look at Wentz's numbers, 26 for 39, over 300 yards. He completes like two of those deep passes. He's looking at like a 400-yard day.
Yeah, but that's the difference between winning against a good team, because the Redskins aren't a great team. So next week against the Chiefs, those two misses could be the difference in winning and losing the game.
Right, and you saw what happened with we'll get to the Chiefs, right? But Alex Smith hit those deep passes last week.
Exactly. So. Now, just to flip, now Jeffrey, he didn't look great.
It's tough. I mean,
we talked about it. He's not going to be a game-breaking receiver.
No, but the one you would have liked it, there was a deeper pass that he had his hands on, and it was a tough catch, but, you know, I'm expecting him to win the jump ball.
Well, he won it, but he couldn't complete it to the ground.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm right. I'm expecting him to fully win it through completion. I'm hoping that he'll be able to do that. Moving forward, and he showed the strength of his hands for better or worse on that 2-point conversion at the end of the game. So you hope to see some improvement there. I mean, he's going to have another tough matchup in Peters this week, so that's tough. I mean, other teams are going to put their number one against him, and he's going to have to produce if he wants to put up numbers. So I think over time he'll be okay. But again, like, we got to connect. That deep ball will open up a ton for this offense.
No, absolutely. And then the last guy I want to touch up on offense is Zach Ertz, who had a fantastic day. It looks like he's going to get Jordan Matthews' receptions this year.
It also – he always has a good day against the Redskins, I feel like. Usually it's just at the end of the year.
Yeah, you're right.
A bad game by his standards against the Redskins. I think he had like over 10 receptions his last couple games against them.
And I did see a stat where his stats through his first 60-something games in the NFL are right on par with Jason Witten and Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, he's obviously nowhere near the complete player, but as a receiver, he's definitely, you know, Wentz's favorite target, I would say, and he's kind of that safety blanket. And I think he was, what, 8 for 8 in terms of targets and receptions? So
yeah,
he can't about his performance at all, I would say. At this point, he is what he is, and I think if he's going to be a receiving tight end who's going to line up in the slot opposite to Aguilar, I think that's what we have to take, and, you know, it may just be time to stop worrying about his ability as a blocker because that ship, I think, has sailed.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like we're going to spend the time running the ball anyway, so... He's not blocking for anybody good.
True. Yeah, so, I mean, all in all, you know, if I had to give the offense a grade, I'd probably give it like a C+.
Yeah, that's about where I'm in. Maybe a B- at the higher end. No higher than a B-.
Yeah, B-, C+. That's kind of where I am. You know, it was good enough to win. against a middling team.
Yeah. Then additionally, flip it to the defensive side, and I thought they looked good. Again, I don't think they looked great, but I was happily surprised with the linebacker play in regards that Michael Kendricks might be proving me wrong this season because he made some really great plays.
He made a great hit.
He wrap tackled better than any player in the NFL has done in the last 10 years. It was he stopped a running back running full speed. That is hard to do.
He stopped Rob Kelly flat in his footsteps. I mean, that was a big hit, and it was like one of those hits where usually it's like a defensive lineman was like running and just like hit someone. Like that was the impact on it, and it was Kendricks. And when I saw it was Kendricks, I was like, oh my God, what the heck happened to this guy?
Yeah, it was great. Bradham played phenomenal. He was all over the field. I was concerned he may have lost a step. He's getting old. He looked great. And Hicks, outside of one play on the touchdown that the Redskins scored where he literally just threw a shoulder at whoever scored the touchdown on that.
Yeah, the Thompson guy.
Yeah. God, other than that play by Hicks, he looked strong as well.
Yeah.
So I was pleasantly surprised there. Once he came in for Darby, played pretty well on the outside.
The corners, I mean, okay. I don't want to give them too much credit because Terrell Pryor might have been our best secondary player in the game.
He was wide open and dropped several passes.
But the corners made some plays. I mean, they made tackles, right? They might have given up receptions, but they made tackles with the exception of that ridiculous touchdown run, throw and run to Chris Thompson. But, yeah, I think by and large, I mean, it's a blessing that Ronald Darby's only out for 4 to 6 weeks. I do not understand how that worked. I mean, his ankle might as well have just been completely removed from his body. Like, that's how bad it looked. It was so bad. So for him to be out for 4 to 6 weeks, I mean, they're going to struggle to a degree, but I think we'll scheme accordingly. And honestly, this team, like we said last week, is going to live and die by the defensive line. The defensive line was in the backfield most of the game. I mean,
let's not go that far.
I think they did a pretty good job, and I think Schwartz was smart with some of his blitz calls. I think that was another key.
I think that was more of a key is that Schwartz showed that he is willing to blitz, and when we did blitz, they were getting home most of the time. If they weren't sacking Cousins, they were getting a hit on him. They were disrupting his throwing motion. The one time he did a nice little chuck and duck as the Redskins were driving, his best Eli Manning impression, and threw it right to Jalen Mills. So that was nice. But I don't think the D-line got as much pressure with just four as I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, but I think also, I mean, I think that they got pressure, and I think Washington has a pretty good offensive line. I mean,
yeah.
I would say we're not going to go against many offensive lines that are as good as that.
Yeah, but if you want to win the division, you got to do it against the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas's offensive line is definitely better, right? But I don't know. I think Trent Williams, Quentin Moses, Brandon Scherff, like they have a solid defensive line – or offensive line, I'm sorry. And, yeah, I mean, Derek Barnett's only going to get better. I think Graham made a couple huge plays. Cox looked good.
Graham, Cox, and Jernigan all looked great. The remaining defensive line looked like they left some to be desired. But that's what you would expect being the second unit.
And over time, right? Over time, I think Barnett will be able to slide in and become a contributor. So, yeah, I mean, they weren't – okay, I guess the pass rush, I will say, in general, was good. And I think that they schemed to their quarterback. Like, Kirk Cousins always sucks when there's pressure in his face. Same deal with Eli. Like, I would expect us to blitz the shit out of Eli. It's going to be like open season in 2 Sundays against Eli because that line can't block for anything.
No, I can't wait for that game. What a great season opener. Eli, just watching Eli lay on his back with that stupid look on his face all day.
Yeah, so I mean, I was pleased. I was pretty pleased with the defense. Like you said, they really only gave up 10 points. They were put in a couple tough spots. Obviously, that fumble, the lateral fumble, you know, that was a tough spot. But I thought they played overall pretty well.
Well, think about it. They had three turnovers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the pick was great, and the pick was purely due to the pass rush. And then the fumble. Well, I mean, the one fumble on the punt was just like, whatever.
Yeah, and then the fumble – well, Fletcher Cox had a good sack fumble in the right. first quarter, which yep. was legit. And then that touchdown, which was a pass. There's, I don't know how they didn't see it as a pass.
It's just tough, right, because I'm guessing that the ref on the field called, oh, he lost the ball before he started going forward, because it was evident that he was going forward. And if you watch it, you can convince yourself that that's a possibility. And I think if they would have called an incomplete pass on the field, they wouldn't have changed it. But like we were talking about, we get screwed over by the refs enough. It was about time one of the calls went our way.
It was nice to be on the other side of one of those situations.
I mean, hell, leading up to that, it was like 9-2 or 3 in terms of penalties in the game. Somehow we had an intentional grounding and then Cousins threw it to no one and it was a no call. So I was fine with it. I didn't need that stress at the end of the game, so it was okay.
No, I was pretty confident that we were going to give up a touchdown and they were going for a 2-point conversion for the tie. So
I no, they wouldn't have needed the two, right? It was 22-17.
You're right. Yeah.
So they would have just won.
Yeah, I would have was actually pretty confident they were going to go down and score. There was very little doubt in my mind.
It was a weird feeling because it was one of those, like, they hadn't really shown you that they could do it, but they still were gone.
Exactly. Exactly. That was the feeling because all day there was no reason they should drive and score on the defense, but
yeah,
this is just how Eagles football goes.
But hey, week one, got to win. It's all that matters. I'd rather play ugly and win than play well and lose.
Absolutely. Now, just to touch up on the injuries, Peters left the game with a torn groin or pulled groin.
Groin, yeah.
Not torn. He'll play this week. He has practice.
Play.
Darby, as we talked about, out 4 to 6 weeks. Praise the Lord.
Yeah.
And then a big loss is Caleb Surges, placed on IR with a hip flexor injury. And they just signed a new kicker today.
Signed a guy from the Bengals practice squad.
Yeah, which I'm not really sure how it goes. So this will be interesting.
Wouldn't surprise me if we went for two in this upcoming game.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. I'm really hoping that at least this guy can kick the ball into the end zone, although our special teams coverage did look pretty strong on kickoffs this past week. But, yeah, that is definitely something to keep our eye on. But why don't we move into a little bit of talk going into week two at Arrowhead Stadium, the loudest stadium in football, and coming on a team that just – won a really big game in Foxborough against the Patriots that neither of us saw coming. I bet you could have asked 100 people, 99 of them would have told you that the Patriots were going to win that game.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, the Chiefs played better than anyone in the NFL last week, and it wasn't that close.
They looked good.
And now we can caveat that with the fact that the Pats did have some injuries on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, losing Dante Hightower was a big loss for them because they don't have depth on defense and they don't have a pass rush. I would say they do have an awesome secondary, and that secondary got picked apart. So I would have thought it wasn't looking good because the Chiefs were going to come in looking to get back on the right foot. Now I just don't think it looks good because they look really good.
Yeah, Alex Smith impressed the hell out of me in this game. I've always been an Alex Smith fan. I think he's a good professional quarterback. I never thought that he should have been benched for Colin Kaepernick back when that happened in San Fran. I thought he was the type of quarterback that could have won you a Super Bowl with that type of defense and running game. And he showed that his accuracy on, like you said earlier, the deep pass – was unbelievable.
Now, his Now, I will say, right, like, it was a different kind of deep ball that he was throwing. He wasn't throwing the deep ball that's, you know, 50 yards in the air. He's throwing the deep ball where somehow Tyreek Hill is uncovered 25 yards down the field and he hits him in stride, you know, 10 yards further down, and then Hill runs for another 40. That's the kind of deep ball he was throwing. Just the
count. Hitting somebody in stride is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we traded up into the fourth round to get Danelle Pumphrey.
This is frustrating.
And the Chiefs just drafted, I believe he went first. Fair enough. He went the third round.
Yep.
But Hunt looked amazing.
Well, and it's Hunt, right? And he's the outlier. He's like, has the awesome game. There's multiple rookie running backs who had great games week one, right? You had Cohen in a really nice game. Alvin Kamara on the Saints looks very good. There's a guy in Arizona, I think, who's going to be coming in for David Johnson, who's looking like he's a player. Bunch of guys who are contributing right off the bat, and Pumphrey's not even going to touch the field this season.
Yeah, and we traded up for him, and we were told that we had to trade up for him because other teams wanted him. Like, I'm sorry, that's a bad miss.
Yep, I completely agree.
Then additionally, going, you know, our defense going against that offense, we're really – the Chiefs threw a lot of different formations out there. He was running the ball from – fullback position. He actually ran it from the quarterback position at one point. They did a lot of misdirection run plays and counters. They ran – it took Andy Reid less than 5 plays to run a shovel pass, which I wish they had those Vegas odds out there because I would have taken the under. Whatever it was, I would have taken the under. Guy loved – he ran – I think it was 6 plays where there was an option for a shovel pass in the game, which is unreal.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, the Chiefs have a ton of weapons on offense, right?
Yeah, I mean, Travis Kelce is a better Zach Ertz. Then you have Tyreek Hill, who's probably the fastest receiver in football right now.
Yep.
And then offensive line played really well, I thought, last week.
I think the offensive line played well, but I think that it was as much the offensive line as it was the Pats' defensive line. I think the Pats' defensive line is lacking, and I think that's being nice.
Yeah, and we'll find that out this week if that was the case. But I would give the Chiefs' offense the edge over our defense after week one, just in their success of spreading the ball around the field and the fact that Andy Reid, I believe, is 7-3 against his former assistants. Which is going to play a role.
And I think Andy Reid with extra time to prepare for a game is always something that I'm concerned about. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the game starts. Wouldn't be surprised if they try and take a shot right away down the field.
Well, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty common for teams to do, but I think – so I guess if we get into, like, the actual matchup and matchups – because the Chiefs are only 5-point favorites. It's not a terribly wide spread, especially considering you get 2.5 for being home. So really they're saying it's a field goal game. I mean, I think the biggest matchup is the front four. We're not going to be able to blitz this game because if you blitz, they're going to kill you with Hunt on a screen. They're going to kill you with Kelce and in the middle, or they're going to pick up the blitz and they're going to be able to go deep because no one on our defense can cover Tyreek Hill one-on-one.
Alex Smith can run out of the backfield. He's shown more of a willingness to do that in his career.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a big game. It's a big game for Bradham trying to cover Kelce. It's a big game for the secondary, but I think you just got the – you have to be smart with your safeties. You've got to give help over the top. Honestly, it's like a Brandon Graham game. He's going to have to be making an impact on the edge, making sure that Smith doesn't have time. I mean, we haven't even gotten around to the offensive side of the ball, but honestly, the offense I don't think is going to matter if we're not able to stop them. And I think I think the line is going to be critical in that, because we're not going to be able to give the same kind of pressure in terms of sending the blitz as frequently, I don't think, because of the deep threat that they have.
Yeah, I think the first team to 24 wins this game. I don't think our offense is going to put up 30 plus points in this game. The Chiefs defense is just too good.
It is good. It's good at every level too.
Yeah, even losing Eric Berry, which is going to be big for this team, they have so many playmakers. Justin Houston, coming off of his injury-plagued season last year and the year prior, looked unblockable at times.
Here's what I want to know. How old is Derek Johnson? I feel like he's 50. He's been playing forever.
It's either that he's been playing forever or that the Chiefs have a new Derek Johnson every decade.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe there's just like another guy named Derek Johnson. It so happens to wear the same number.
Yeah, because he's ageless. Like you said, Tamba Ali didn't even get any snaps, and I still think he has something to bring to the table as a pass rusher. Marcus Peters is, to me, the best cornerback in football.
It's matchups again, right? Like, you watched what the Pats tried to do against them. They weren't really throwing at Peters that often. So where were they going? They were going to the other side of the field with that Cooks versus Mitchell matchup. And this is where Wentz is probably going to have a couple chances with Smith lined up against this Mitchell guy. He's going to have to hit him, right? You're going to get a couple open passes. The pass missed on, didn't connect on a couple of those. You got to connect on them because he's beatable. And I think that was exposed last week. I think Cooks didn't have necessarily a huge games number-wise, but he drew like three or four flags against this guy. Couple holds, couple pass interferences. So we're going to have to attack him. I think Ertz, could have a decent game because Berry was all over Gronk last week. All over him. Now he's not there. So I think that helps. You need Peters this game. You need Johnson playing well because Justin Houston's going to line up all over the field and try and get after the quarterback. So it's just, they're a good team. We did our predictions last week. We both have them losing. We'll get into our predictions, but I'm not going to be like heartbroken if we lose this game because it's just a very tough matchup on the road.
Yeah, you'll say that now. I'm going to be pissed off when we lose.
I'm not going to be happy, but it's not like, I'm never happy when we lose, right? But it's like, on paper, we shouldn't win this game. If you're a playoff team, if you're a playoff team and you're competing to win, I would say this is the kind of game, you win this game and you win it like, not convincingly, but like, you compete the entire game, pull out a W in Kansas City after the poor performance they just had last week. You're definitely much more in the conversation as, the top dog in the division at that point, I think. I think this is that kind of game. Like, I think – I mean, unless no, it's myself too, but this would be a very, very impressive win for the Eagles.
No, I agree. And if they win this game, it just gives me confidence that they are a better team than I've given them credit for.
You said they were going to be 6-10, so I think that's fair.
I think after week one that I'm not necessarily wrong.
we both predicted the –
So kind of just to go into it, I know you just said, why don't we just break out our predictions here for the game?
Okay.
And then, of course, player of the game. I believe we didn't touch on this in the recap of the last week. I had Darren Sproles player of the game, and you had Alshon Jeffrey.
No, I didn't. I had Mac Hollins. I went out on a limb. I don't think I – Mac Hollins didn't even touch the field, really. So I'm not going to predict Mac Hollins anymore.
Mac Hollins had three snaps. So I believe that I get the week one player of the week.
That's fair. That's fine.
Even though Sproles didn't have a great game, he definitely was better than Mac Hollins.
Yeah. That's fair. All right, so you want to go prediction or you want me to go?
Why don't you go ahead and break down a prediction?
All right, so I'm actually going to go a little bit unoriginal here, but I'm going to go same score as this past week, opposite results. I think the Chiefs win 30-17.
Well, you are such – oh, okay, never mind. I thought you were going to predict 28-24 again, your prediction for last week's game. So 30
– No, I'm going 30-17 Chiefs. I think I just think the Chiefs are a better team than us. I don't think offensively we're necessarily going to be able to put a lot of points on the board. And I think the Chiefs are going to just have a couple of those big plays. And yeah, I mean, I would say what I'll do though is I'll predict player of the game, and I'll still predict an Eagle. And it'll basically be like, here's my player of the game if we win.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'll say Brandon Graham, my player of the game. I think, you know, for us to win, he's going to have, you know, two sacks, forced fumble, and be a disruptive and, like, a pass deflection. Like, he's going to have a huge game.
Fair enough. I definitely don't see us winning the game either. We talked about it in our season predictions. And after week one, I don't have much more confidence coming to this game at all. I like the Chiefs to come out of this game 27-10. I don't think our offense is going to be able to move the ball against this defense because we have not shown any ability to have a balance in the run and the pass games. And if you are not able to run the ball effectively against this defense and you let Justin Houston, Derek Johnson, these linebackers rush the quarterback, pin their ears back and just go, you're wishing trouble upon Carson Wentz and the offense. Additionally, on the defensive side, I just think there are a lot of matchup nightmares, and I think Andy Reid is going, with those extra days, is just going to game plan better than Schwartz and the Eagles will. So that's really, I think, what it boils down to. If the Eagles win this game, it will be no, I don't even think it will be a defensive player. I think it will be because that Sproles will go off because he's the only running back that can create a matchup nightmare for the Chiefs. He's the only player on our team that I really think can create a matchup nightmare. So if Sproles somehow gets one of these games where he can get 12 to 15 touches for 150 yards and two touchdowns, that's the type of thing that could help open the offense up. And I really think that's the only way the offense could really get going. I'm not going to pick a defensive player player for player of the game. I'm going to go with an offensive player because just to win this game, the offense is going to have to put up some points. I think the defense is going to give up points no matter what. And I think that the offensive player that can create matchup nightmares for the Chiefs and the only player that can really create a matchup nightmare for the Chiefs is Darren Sproles. This is the type of game where if somehow you're able to get Sproles 12 to 15 carries or touches for 150 yards, two touchdowns, get him involved in the offense to the point where the Chiefs are now focused on stopping him. It may help open something in the passing game or the run game. And I think that's the only real matchup that the Eagles have offensively against the Chiefs defense that could potentially help the offense really move the ball and put up some
points. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I would say also, like, if you do look at the first half, we did mention, you know, Gillislee had a big first half against the Chiefs last week. So it'd be interesting if they did commit to Blunt a little bit. I don't know what he's going to give you, but even if he gave you like 15 carries for 60 yards and then you get Sproles, I think if you got Blunt for 15 to for 60 and you give Sproles 15 touches in the game, that's at least a balance that's not going to let those defensive ends pin their ears back. It's going to keep them honest.
And but
it's just, you know, does Blunt give you 15 for 60? Or does he give you 15 for 35, right? If he gives you 15 for 35, then you're going to get crushed. And exactly. They're going to win it before then anyway.
Yeah, because 15 for 35, there's no point in running the ball.
Right, right. So we'll see. I mean, I'm still going to watch, and honestly, like, no, I mean, sorry, I, you know, didn't frame it. Obviously, I'm going to watch. I don't know. I mean, I still think we have a shot to win, but I just, you know, I think it wouldn't be, I'm not like, it's not going to be a miracle if we win this game. I guess that's what I'm getting at. Like, I think we had, you know, we've laid out what needs to happen for the Eagles to have a shot, and it's not terribly unreasonable that it couldn't happen. It's just more likely that the Chiefs come out and take care of business on their home field against us.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, not too much more to talk about the game. We're just hopefully come 1 p.m. Sunday, we'll be watching the Eagles take the field and start strong. And by 4:30, we will, Eagles fans, looking at 2-0 going into the next week's Giants game instead of 1-1.
Yeah, hopefully we're wrong.
So I think that's really everything we wanted to touch on this week in regards to podcasts. Did you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts? Quick shout out, Baker Mayfield. Love the move to plant the Oklahoma flag on Ohio State's midfield. I think, you know, always love seeing someone stick it to the Buckeyes. So that was probably the other sports highlight of the weekend that I had to love.
Yeah, obviously this is a Penn State fan's opinion, but there's nothing better than when Ohio State loses. You know, Penn State win, Ohio State, Michigan losses. They feel so good. And then when you can just stick it to Ohio State like that, those cocksuckers at Ohio State, it was just awesome. Just awesome. You know, since you gave a shout out, I will give a shout out. Keeping it on the college football side of things, shout out to Coach James Franklin. I've never been a huge Coach James Franklin fan. The Pitt game, he had one of my favorite comments that he's ever made, stating that was like beating Akron, which is just such a slap in the face to Pitt that I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that was a great line.
So it was just a really – just good to see him put his dick on the table and – put Pitt in their place. They shouldn't have beat us last year. They're never going to beat us again. And it felt good. I grew some respect for Coach James Franklin with that comment.
Yep. Nah, that was awesome. So we'll see. Penn State's got Georgia State, so, you know, easy W hopefully for them. No hope, you know, you just hope for no injuries. And big college football game this week is Clemson-Louisville, so that should be very entertaining. And then, you know, another slate of NFL games, big Eagles game. Hopefully we're back next week talking about a Birds W.
Absolutely. So just to wrap up, there will be later in the week a Nittany Lion, Lion Chat podcast out there to go over the Georgia State game, or to preview the Georgia State game and review the Pitt game. As always, please follow us or subscribe to us on iTunes, Pass the Mic. I'll say it every week. We just appreciate you subscribe because it does help us out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, hope everyone has a good rest of the week. Enjoy the football. Go Birds.
Go Birds.